Sports 101.3, The Game. The Game. Sports trending now.
We are entering the Cat's Den. We'll have all things Catamounts from all angles over the next hour. We'll talk with UVM Associate Men's Basketball Coach Kyle Saplicki, who will join us at 6:15. UVM Women's Hockey Coach Jim Plumer will join us at about 6:40. And former Catamount legend and Hockey Hall of Famer Martin St. Louis has a new job. He's back in the NHL. We'll cover all of it in the Cat's Den as well. Patriots and Rams are ready for the Super Bowl. We'll have it for you on the air, of course, on February 3rd is where you're home with the Patriots. But the two teams already getting ready for each other. Rams safety Joe Johnson says it's an honor to play against Tom Brady, although his team can't be too reverential in their praise of Brady. Sean McVay says he has immense respect for Bill Belichick. Belichick says the same about McVay. He also calls Rams defensive lineman Aaron Donald practically unblockable. It'll be one of the biggest things we're watching for over the next 2 weeks. Remember, I'll be out at Radio Row next week bringing you all the sound and insight from Super Bowl Media Week, all thanks to our friends at the AutoMax Group. We're minutes away from the announcement of the 2019 Baseball Hall of Fame inductees. Mariano Rivera, former Yankee, he figures to be on the list. Could he be a unanimous 100% vote? If he is, he'd be the first one all time. We'll keep you updated in the Cat's Den as the Hall of Fame inductees for 2019 are announced. The Cat's Den is next on 101.3 The Game. 101.3thegame.com. Always streaming. Take us anywhere on the 101.3 The Game app and on your Amazon Echo.
This is 101.3 The Game. On the Vermont Sports Network, this is the Cat's Den. Now, here is your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? This is the Cat's Den on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. We are always on the 101.3 The Game app, and you can listen on your Amazon Echo just by simply telling your Alexa to stream 101.3 The Game. We do go up until 7 o'clock, and then it will be trivia night at the Burger Bar. Rich will be there 7:30 to 9:30. $2.50 Collective Arts Brewing Drafts. Lots of great prizes as well. So if you're in the area, stop on by. Heck, if you're not in the area, just make it part of your night. Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. We do have a full show again going until 7 o'clock. Kyle Saplicki will join us at 6:15, associate men's basketball coach, associate head coach of the men's basketball program. He'll talk all things Catamounts. Catamounts getting ready for a America East Conference Championship rematch with UMBC, the game that shocked us all last March. The Retrievers came into Patrick Gym and won. The last second shot by Jairus Lyles sent the Retrievers to the tournament and on to the greatest upset in NCAA tournament history. Catamounts were left at the altar on that afternoon at Patrick Gym, and we will be talking about that matchup too. Tomorrow, 6:30, the coverage will start right here on 101.3 The Game. And UVM women's hockey coach Jim Plumer will stop by too at 6:40. We are going to get the announcement during this show of Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame class. So while it is not Catamount-specific news, we will give you the breaking news of Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame class. I have to start with this, though. UVM men's basketball is 15-4 on the season. They are 5-0 in America East Conference play, and really nothing has been that close for them in conference play. They have rolled through America East play so far. They beat Albany by nearly 20. They beat Binghamton by 28 the other day. I mean, it has been ugly what the Catamounts have done to their opponents in conference play. Save for a six-minute stretch against New Hampshire, nobody has even belonged on the floor with UVM right now. And I have been a proponent of UVM staying in the America East, and you guys have all said, oh, they should leave. Oh, it should get bigger and better, and oh, they should make the arena bigger when they, you know, when the new event center gets built, and oh, they should go play in the A-10. How about the Big East? I fought against all of that, and I will continue to, because I do believe that this is cyclical, and just as easily as you see teams dominate, you can see those teams regress when certain players graduate. All of that said, I am shocked right now at the lack of depth in the America East. It is rather embarrassing, and I don't want to take away from how good UVM is, because I believe them to be very good. And they've shown that on the national scale by playing with Kansas, by playing with Louisville. They only have one real bad loss on their schedule, and it was the loss to Lipscomb on the road, who also is one of the best mid-major programs in the entire country. So I don't want to downplay how good UVM is, but it needs to be known just how embarrassingly bad the America East Conference is this year. 802-655-6672. You can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line all the way up until 7 o'clock. I was doing a lot of research over the weekend. And I started thinking to myself, well, maybe UVM is just so much better because they're so much more invested in the program. Maybe they just spend way more money than everybody else, and they have a bigger recruiting budget and bigger coaches' salaries, and now they're getting a new event center. Maybe that's possible. I went and looked. Four teams in the America East spend more money on basketball than University of Vermont. Four teams. Albany, Stony Brook, Hartford, UMass Lowell. They all spend more money on the basketball program in its totality than Vermont. When you combine everything, and I imagine that means everything, travel expenses, uniforms, coaches' salaries, all of the above, recruiting. Four teams in the league spend more money than Vermont, but yet Vermont is head and shoulders above everybody this season. How is that possible? I know Stony Brook's undefeated in the league. We're going to see them on Saturday night when they when UVM goes down to play Stony Brook on Long Island. But, I mean, we're following along the other day, and Stony Brook's down at halftime to an awful team also. So I'm going to think that UVM is much better than them also. And I expect UVM to roll through UMBC tomorrow, and I expect them to beat Stony Brook on the road in their own building on Saturday. That is not a good look for the league. I'll give UVM one loss this year in the league. Let's just play the hypothetical game for a minute. UVM loses one game in the league this year. They go 15-1. That will make their three-year total in America East Conference play 46-2. 46-2 over a three-year span. That should not happen. I was talking with Kevin Sweeney of College Basketball Central, who's a college student, actually, but follows this with incredible depth. And his blog on mid-major basketball is rather amazing. He said Stephen F. Austin is the only school in the country out of the Southland Conference that could even sniff what Vermont is doing if they do hypothetically do that 46-2 over a three-year span. That is embarrassing for the league. The lack of depth right now is appalling. And I understand this was predictable to me in some ways. I knew that UMBC wasn't going to be very good this year. I knew they weren't going to be great. They're not the team that beat Virginia last year. They're not the team that beat Vermont in the conference championship game. When you graduate at this level, when you graduate your best player, when you graduate a guy who's getting sniffs at the NBA in Jairus Lyles, and you graduate KJ Mora, who's your point guard and your floor general, when you graduate those guys, you're supposed to have a step back. And UMBC is having that this year. I mean, UMBC got taken to overtime at home by Albany the other day. They're not going to come into Patrick Gym and win tomorrow. It's not going to happen. I don't know that UVM is going to beat them by 47 or something, but they're going to win, and they're going to win by 15-plus tomorrow. You can mark that down. I have no doubt in my mind Catamounts win by at least 15 tomorrow. They're not as good as they were a year ago. And again, it's predictable. When UAlbany loses their two best players, two seniors, and they transfer, it's predictable that they're going to take a step back. But for a program, and I love Will Brown, for a program that's been to the NCAA tournament five times under Will Brown since he's taken over at Albany, there's got to be something in the cupboard there to step up and play competitive basketball. UAlbany, a team that's been at the top of this league with Vermont for the last 15 years, they got beat by Maine, who was atrocious also. The lack of depth right now is embarrassing in the conference. And no, I don't think the answer is, oh, just UVM needs to leave. How about, oh, the programs need to get better and be more consistently good? Because last I checked, the University of Vermont graduated 2 years ago, 1,000-point scorer in Kurt Steidel. They graduated the Defensive Player of the Year in Dre Wills. They graduated the Sixth Man of the Year in Darren Payne. They lost all those guys. Before that, they lost Ethan O'Day, a guy who was playing in the G League. Last year, they lost a two-time America East Player of the Year in Trey Bell Haynes. You know where they are? 5-0 in the league, 15-4 overall. That's the sign of a good program. The other programs need to get to that level. I mean, four teams are outspending the Catamount program, outspending the UVM Athletic Department on basketball, and yet they can't even sniff the talent and consistency that UVM puts out there. And it's not a knock at UVM. I'm not saying here, oh, UVM needs to blow its budget out of the water. It's amazing what they have done, given that there are clearly some budgetary restraints. It's more a knock on what other programs are not doing in the same stratosphere as UVM. Look, again, I don't want UVM to leave the America East. Not now. I have said it over and over again that you will hurt the overall quality of the athletic department if you move other programs out of the America East. You can't do that. You can't think with a basketball mind only. You can't say that you've truly dominated the America East until you win it over and over and over and over again, and you've made noise in the tournament, a la Gonzaga, a la Butler, a la Creighton, a la VCU, a la Wichita State, these teams that have left leagues. UVM hasn't done that. They haven't won a game in the tournament outside the first four play-in since 2005. That's not the mark of an Atlantic 10 team to me. But nonetheless, I don't think that they should leave, but I do think the other teams need to be better because this is embarrassing. It's embarrassing what we're seeing out of the rest of the league. It's great for UVM. I hope they roll through the league and go 16-0, but I also don't want the league schedule to turn into a snooze fest. Hey, call me when the conference tournament starts, and then I'll start paying attention. That's not what I want. I was shocked to see four schools, spending more on basketball than the University of Vermont. They're all relatively jumped, you know, bundled up. I think the most was Stony Brook was spending $2.3 million a year on its basketball program. UVM was like 1.7. So the difference between 1 and 5 was just 600,000. It wasn't massive. Everyone's in the same neighborhood practically. But to find out that UVM is in the middle of the pack of spending in its own league and they're this much better, it's an indictment on the rest of the league. Again, Catamounts will take on UMBC. We'll have it for you tomorrow, 6:30. As far as this game goes, and Kyle Saplicki, the associate head coach, he's going to join us in a matter of minutes here. On the other side of our first break here in the Cat's Den, we'll ask him, how does this team handle this matchup? Yes, it is a rematch of the America East Conference Championship game. Jairus Lyles hit the shot for UMBC. He's not here anymore. He's gone. He graduated. Trayvell Haynes, not here anymore. Gone. Graduated. Drew Urquhart, guy who missed the Hail Mary at the end. Gone. Graduated. Peyton Henson, gone. Graduated. I mean, these are different teams on both sides. The logos are the same. The venue is the same. The head coaches are the same, but a lot has changed. What do I imagine will happen tomorrow night? I think the Catamount team will be aware of what went on last year. The veteran players, Anthony Lamb, Ernie Duncan, etc., they will be aware of what happened on their home floor. I predict Anthony Lamb will come out and play incredibly motivated. I think he, like the New England Patriots, can draw motivation from anywhere and can play with a chip on his shoulder. I imagine he will come out like a man possessed tomorrow. I imagine he will play extremely well. I imagine Ernie Duncan will be fired up. And other than that, I think the rest of the team will look at this as just another game. It will be coach speak to say last year was last year, this year is this year. But I truly think that most of the Catamounts are going to think about it that way because a lot of them either weren't here or weren't involved last season. The fans will be geeked for it. Lamb will be geeked for it. And Ernie will be geeked for it. Other than that, I don't think that last year's storyline is going to be as big for certain players as maybe we want it to be. It is the Cat's Den on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Again, Baseball Hall of Fame announcement is taking place right now. On the other side of the break, we will update you on where we are right now with the Baseball Hall of Fame inductee announcement, and then we will get to Kyle Saplicki, associate head coach, UVM men's basketball. That's all next in the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 The Game.
Get your Catamount questions in now at 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. It's the Cat's Den with Brady Farkas on 101.3 The Game at 101.3thegame.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Your home for Catamount basketball, Cats, and UMBC. The Retrievers come to town tomorrow at 6:30. Kyle Saplicki, associate head coach, will join us in about 5 minutes here on the Cat's Den. Do want to get you guys updated, though, on what's going on. The Major League Baseball Hall of Fame inductees for 2019 are being announced as we speak. So far, there have been two announcements. Edgar Martinez, 18 years with the Seattle Mariners. My Mariners, pumped for him. I'll get to him in 1 second and what he means to me as a fan, but what he also meant to baseball. He gets in after 10 years of waiting to get to the Hall of Fame, the greatest DH of all time. Roy Halladay, he gets in as well. Mike Mussina, former Yankee, he makes it. That is some interesting news. That was one we were unsure about We will talk about that as well. And then I have to imagine that there will be a fourth, and it will be Mariano Rivera. I can't see it going beyond that. But, I mean, I'm looking at Twitter as we go right now. So far we are at three of the four: Edgar Martinez, Roy Halladay, Mike Mussina. Again, a bit of a surprise. I agree with that decision. We'll talk about that as well. 802-655-6672. You can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Again, I have to imagine Mariano Rivera is next and is last. The biggest question will be, will he get 100% of the votes? If he does, that will be the first time in history. It didn't happen for Ken Griffey. It didn't happen for Nolan Ryan, Tom Seaver. It didn't happen for Ty Cobb, Jackie Robinson. No one in baseball history ever got 100% of the Hall of Fame vote. Mariano Rivera is fixing to be in that conversation. I don't know that it will happen because it never happened for either one of those guys, but as soon as that breaks, I will let you know. Town Fair Tire text line, again, is open. Whatever you want to talk about, whether it's baseball Hall of Fame stuff or the Cats. Jeff in Plattsburgh says, Brady, I look at UVM like I look at the Patriots. There's no other message there, Jeff. I presume you just mean that you just think they're flat out better than everybody else and they have a better system than everyone else. And that's fine. You can think that. But much like I can ask about the futility of the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins in the Patriots run, I can ask why other teams aren't capable of replicating it. Why is Vermont so much better than all of the other teams in the America East this year? That is where I'm really coming from. I'm not trying to take away from Vermont. The other teams, though, if they're spending all around the same money, and in some cases more than UVM, then there absolutely needs to be some more competitive depth in this league. Justin in Essex, great opening, spot on for UVM. Things can change fast, but what a run so far. Go Cats. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you agreeing with my take. That's always nice to hear, as opposed to the people who tell you that they disagree with you. But again, it is cyclical. And I told you, I understand why UMBC struggles this year, why Albany struggles this year. UVM hasn't had that struggle, though. Despite graduation, despite injury last year with Anthony Lamb, they're always still in the conversation. And there it is. It is breaking news. Mariano Rivera, the first ever unanimous Baseball Hall of Fame electee. He gets votes on all 425. All 425 ballots that were cast. So that is your four-person Hall of Fame class for 2019. Text line open. Edgar Martinez, Roy Halladay, Mike Mussina, and Mariano Rivera. A couple thoughts. One, for our audience of Yankee fans, congratulations to you. Mariano Rivera is a class act and is someone who... This goes to what we talked about on Friday. We talked about the most hated teams in sports. And we said about the Yankees. The Yankees themselves are hated. The logo is hated. The winning culture is hated. The identity of the Yankees is hated. It's hard to hate a lot of the individual Yankees, especially the Yankees of the late 90s. There's nothing to hate about Jeter. There's nothing to hate about Bernie Williams. There's nothing to hate about Rivera. There's nothing to hate about Posada. That core four... There's nothing to hate about those guys, okay? Andy Pettit, you want to hate because of steroids? Sure. Clemens, Giambi, A-Rod, I'll give you all that. You can't hate those guys. You can't hate Rivera. Class act, the best to ever do it at his position. And I think he deserved to be 100% unanimous. Just because Griffey, Mays, you know, Jackie Robinson, just because those guys were wronged by voters in the past doesn't mean we deserve to wrong Rivera. He's the best player ever at his position. He accumulated the stats. He did it when it mattered most. It doesn't matter if you want to talk about longevity or small sample size. He excelled in all of it. Congratulations to Yankee fans. Congratulations to Mariano Rivera. Truly the best closer to ever do it. I mean, at a .70 ERA in the playoffs. That is unbelievable. That is special. And that is in Cooperstown, and that is forever. Congratulations, Mariano Rivera. As for Mike Mussina, Yankee fans, congratulations to you again. He is a former Yankee. I don't see Mussina as a Yankee. In my mind, he'll be wearing an Oriole hat in the Hall of Fame, and I hope that he ultimately is. Five-time All-Star, seven-time Gold Glove winner. He never felt like he stood out above the Greg Maddux. He never felt like he stood out as the flamethrower of Randy Johnson. He never felt like that guy. But when you look at a 17-18-year career, 18 years it was, where he averaged 17-10 with a 3.7 ERA, in the AL East, in the steroid era, Mike Mussina was incredibly consistent. He won 20 games as a 39-year-old. whether it was a stat accumulator or not. I mean, he finished in the top six of Cy Young voting 9 times. He was there in the conversation for the best pitcher every year, even if he was never the best. I believe Mike Mussina should be a Hall of Famer. Also, for me, I'm pumped to see Edgar Martinez in the Hall of Fame. It took him 10 years. I've never liked the idea that a guy who's a, quote, specialist shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Yes, he's a DH. Yes, he only plays half the games, but he also was the best at his position. And Mariano Rivera, we just told you, he got 100% of the vote to get to the Hall of Fame. First player to ever do that. Edgar Martinez was 11 for 19 against him in his career. That, I mean, 11 for 19 against a guy who got 100% of the vote, there's something there that makes you special. Congratulations to everybody. Roy Halladay gets in posthumously as well. His tragic death a year ago. Happy to see him get in. Maybe the story of his death made him so he was a first ballot guy. I don't know. But a guy who had, what, 69 complete games in his career, nobody throws complete games anymore, and he was averaging, it was like 10 a season or something like that in his career. So good for Roy Halladay to get in also. Now, hey, we want to go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and talk more about UVM men's basketball. And again, you can continue to get in all show long. But Kyle Saplicki, the associate head coach of the Catamounts, he is joining us. Kyle, I appreciate you waiting for us as well to get through the Hall of Fame announcement. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
Appreciate you joining us. Catamounts are rolling right now, 15-4, 5-0 in America East play. But before we get to basketball, I got to start with this. Super Bowl is now set, Patriots and Rams. Tell me, what did the Catamount program do for Super Bowl Sunday? You guys get a big get-together or what?
Typically when we're on the road, we'll do something together, but I think we're going to be at home this year, so my wife is a huge Pats fan, so being a Giants fan, I will be silently watching and trying not to make any comments that will upset her.
What is the go-to meal for you on Super Bowl Sunday?
Oh, man, that's a good question. We usually rotate from year to year, maybe doing something themed with where the bowl is taking place, so maybe we'll do some Southern-style cooking out of Atlanta.
Just order Chick-fil-A from Plattsburgh, and you'll be good.
I wish. Coach Schneider on our staff here is the biggest Chick-fil-A fan ever, and JB likes it as well. So,
well, I had my first taste of it a couple weeks ago, so I was a fan too. So Chick-fil-A and Coca-Cola, you'll be right in Atlanta's wheelhouse there.
Absolutely.
Let's talk basketball again. 15-4, 5-0 in America East Conference play. What do you like about this team right now?
I think it's a really tough group. You know, physically and mentally, going back to Canada when we played in August, you know, just our physicality with our on-ball defense and just overall as a group really stood out. And, you know, I think it's carried through and made us a better defensive team, you know, through 19 games this year.
You know, Will Brown said it before the Albany game. Maine's coach said it before you played them. They've lauded praise on you guys for your perimeter defense. They have said this is the best perimeter defensive team we think Vermont has had ever. How is that even possible, considering 2 years ago you had the Defensive Player of the Year in Dre Wills and you graduated so much experience off last year's team? How is this team better in that regard?
Well, I think we're deeper, you know, in terms of our perimeter players with the amount of quality defenders we have in the team. And I think the guys that we have now are probably a little bigger and more athletic than guys we've had in the past. So, you know, Ernie Duncan, who was a first-team All-League defender last year, you know, I think if you ask people in our program, he's maybe our third or fourth best guy in terms of being an on-ball defender out of our perimeter group. So it's a great luxury to have.
How much more of an emphasis has perimeter defense become over the last few years that you've been on staff? We know about the explosion of the three-point shot, and it feels like you guys have put a major emphasis on it both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, with teams playing smaller and playing more shooting, you know, especially in our league, teams are going to have four or five guys who can make a three on the floor at one time. So, you know, if you're in positions where you can switch or need to switch, you know, having more guys who can guard the ball and keep the ball out of the paint to eliminate those paint touch kickouts for open threes is huge. So, you know, I think, you know, as I just said, having three or four guys out there at the same time who can all really defend the ball in one-on-one, it goes a long way to defending the three-point line. So it's been a huge key for us.
Kyle Saplicki, associate head coach, UVM men's basketball, with us here on the Cats Den, 101.3 The Game. Cats are going to take on UMBC tomorrow. We'll have that for you at 6:30. Stony Brook on Saturday. This is the week that people have been waiting for. People have been saying, hey, the Catamounts are unbeaten, but who have they played? Well, they're going to play the team that ended your season last year, and you're going to play the team that's on your heels in the America East and Stony Brook. How do you... I guess I want to say balance the expectations of this great week, but also just recognizing it's one game at a time.
Yeah, you know, we've really been taking it game by game. So admittedly, this week has kind of snuck up on us, with having two big games here. I think with the nature of our team this year and losing as many guys as we did off of last year's great group, you know, who were a part of, in their careers, a ton of really big wins and great seasons, We were unsure, just how good this team could be. And now here we are, having had a lot of success early in the year. So our approach has been different this year in terms of not having quite the same expectation, on the outside, and just trying to figure out what team we were going to be. And I think now that we've kind of established ourselves, these games become bigger. Still want to just show up today and have a great practice and be ready to go tomorrow and just take it one day at a time, one game at a time.
How do you guys mention last year's game against UMBC? I know it's coach speak to say that was last year, this is this year, but also there's probably some truth in that, and that there's so few players on both sides that played pivotal roles in that game. How do you handle it? Do you even mention it?
Yeah, we haven't mentioned it yet. I'm sure today it'll come up, or we'll talk about it in our preparation. I think just tactically, more than anything, with how they played against us, that made it a successful game for them, and just how they were able to defend us and score on us and all that. That'll probably be the biggest thing. But for the guys who were involved in last year's game, I'm sure, there might be some extra emotion. We got to channel that into us being able to play smarter and harder than we did in last year's game to hopefully help us win.
You know, it's easy to point to the conference depth. Right now, it doesn't appear that the America East has a lot of depth to it, just being honest from my opinion, but it was kind of obvious to forecast. When Albany loses its two best players to transfer and UMBC graduates its players, you can see, how cyclical the league can be. But yet you guys have been able to constantly refuel and stay at the top of the league. How have you guys done that where other programs might not have had as much success doing that?
I'm not sure. I think we've been able to bring in quality recruiting classes, in the past couple of years, and we do have a nice mix of veterans and young guys on our team this year. So, we haven't, despite losing four scholarship guys last year who played a lot, we probably haven't had quite the turnover that other teams have had, with the amount of guys they lost to graduation. So, it's been nice to have younger players who are good and have played this year, to have them play well. That's certainly, helped keep us afloat. So, I think it's just year to year continuing to try to bring in quality players and hopefully those guys can play well earlier in their career.
You mentioned recruiting, and I just tell this story to you briefly. When I was a college baseball player, I played Division III. We were awful my junior year. We were 1-17 in our conference. The next year we got a new coach, and instantly things changed, and now they're playing in the College World Series every year, it feels like, at my alma mater. And the way it happened was because my new coach came in and said, look, I'm going to not recruit Division III players. I'm going to recruit all Division I players, and if I call 300 of them and I hit on six, well, then we've got the best the best recruiting class in the league. How do you guys constantly recruit so well? Because it feels like you guys have a number of players that could play at a, quote, bigger league.
Yeah, well, I think the tradition of the program and the competitive success that we've had that's able to get us in the door with players who might be being recruited at a higher level. So the most important thing is that, we're targeting those guys and we're trying to get those guys. The worst they can say is no, right? So it's always a goal to bring in a better or more talented player than the ones you just lost. So I think... and especially under JB, we've really tried to, expand our recruiting boundaries and recruit the entire country and Canada, and make sure that we're trying to bring in the best player possible, for the sake of the program. And if maybe some guys end up saying no who go to higher levels, you know, we're still, you know, recruiting, a quality level of player who's able to play here. So I think we've hit on a bunch of guys we really targeted, and it's worked out well for us.
How special is what we're seeing from Anthony Lamb this season?
It's been awesome. It's been great to see him, his growth as a two-way player, being really solid and executing our system defensively and providing, the rim protection that he has, but also just being an example of being in the right place at the right time and from game to game being able to follow a plan and a scout. And, I think it's been a huge part of our culture that guys come in who are talented and are young, like Anthony, and they learn, and they learn from the example of older guys. And now he's a junior, an upperclassman, who's teaching an Isaiah Maul and a Ryan Davis how to go about their business. So, by the time they get older, they're able to pass it along.
How much has Anthony Lamb grown? I mean, his offensive game is diversified. His defensive game is diversified. He's become better with the media. He seems to become a better leader. How does he keep getting better in all those regards all at once?
Well, I think it's really important to him that he gets better. And he puts a lot of time and effort into his game. And he really cares. He cares about our program first and foremost. And, he wants to be a pro in some way, shape, or form and make money off of basketball as he gets older. He understands that. And I think it's gone a long way to help making him, like you said, a much more diverse player. I think his decision-making offensively has gotten a lot better. He's a really good passer, and I think that's shown more this year with his assist-to-turnover ratio improving. And just being able to take the right shot for our team when we need it and not play through two or three guys all the time.
Usually when we see really dominant players at mid-major levels, it feels like it's always a point guard, someone who's quicker than everybody, someone who can shoot great. In the America East, I feel like that's been the case too, but with the exception of Jameel Warney at Stony Brook a few years ago, how nice is it for you guys to have I don't know that Anthony's really necessarily a big man in the usual way, but he's a 6'7 player. How nice is it for you to have someone with that kind of size be this dominant?
It's great. You always, especially in the biggest of games and when you get down to the end of the year and you play a team for the third time and everybody scouted each other and knows what everybody's running, having a guy who can get you easy baskets at the rim goes a long way. And we feel like we have that with Anthony, especially when he's being guarded by a player of like size or someone smaller. But then, he obviously has the ability to step out and put it down on the floor or make threes against bigger guys. So, we appreciate the fact that he's such a matchup problem in that regard.
Kyle, we'll get you out of here on this. As someone who knows the high school community, high school basketball community in the state of Vermont extremely well, as you and your whole family does, how nice is it to see Ben Shungu not only playing a role, but playing a significant role? He's been a big part of a lot of your guys' wins. How good is that for him, your team, and for the area as a whole?
Well, he's a great kid and a great teammate, and he's waited his turn and gotten better and learned along the way. There's actually a lot of parallels with he and I with how our careers have gone here. Just, both going to Rice and being from the area. I redshirted my first year and really didn't play my actual freshman year, and learned and got better and played against better competition, obviously, in practice for 2 years. He's done the same thing, and I think he's been very patient and positive. And it's really working out for him this year. Everything has come about at the right time for him, and he's taken advantage of his opportunity. He's one of our best perimeter defenders. He's been able to play the point more for us, and his shooting has improved. So, we look forward to him getting better and better, and couldn't be happier for him.
Kyle Saplicki, associate head coach, UVM men's basketball, back on the floor tomorrow night. Patrick Jim going to take on UMBC. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30 right here on 101.3 The Game. Kyle, we appreciate it. Good luck, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay, thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. There he goes, Kyle Saplicki. Love what he had to say about recruiting. And John Becker uses that line a lot. He says, we're looking to recruit a better version of a player that we've already had. So, look, you got a Trayvell Haynes, we're trying to find a better one. You had an Anthony Lamb, we're trying to find a better one. At some point, I don't know, can you find a better version of Anthony Lamb than Anthony Lamb? But love what Kyle Saplicki had to say. A lot of fun talking with him. And I didn't want it to go unnoticed about how important Ben Shungu has been to this team. He really has been. Whether he scores 2 points or 10 points, he's had some games where he gets double figures. He's been solid defensively, rebounds, passes well, can play the point, and just adds to the overall depth of UVM. And it's great for the local community because it is ultimately great to see when Vermont does produce a high-level Division I athlete. It's great to see them excel, and it's great to see them excel locally. So good for Ben Shungu and his opportunity continuing to grow with the UVM men's basketball team. All right, when we come back, we'll take more of your texts, especially on the Baseball Hall of Fame stuff, the breaking news, Mariano Rivera, 100% of the vote, first ever unanimous selection to the Baseball Hall of Fame. And we'll tell you about Martin St. Louis, speaking of Hall of Fame, Hockey Hall of Famer. We'll tell you about his new gig. He's back in the NHL. That's all next on the Cats Den, 101.3 The Game.
Get your Catamount questions in now at 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. It's the Cat's Den with Brady Farkas on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com.
All right, welcome back here in the Cat's Den right here, 101.3 The Game. Remember, trivia night tonight, O'Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. If you missed the announcement earlier in the show, it is breaking news. Mariano Rivera, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, and Roy Halladay all get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Rivera does so on the first ballot, as does Halladay. It is the first time ever that a player has been inducted with 100% of the vote. That is what Mariano Rivera got. 425 ballots, 425 votes. Look, I get the logic of, hey, if X, Y, and Z player can't be 100%, why can Mariano Rivera? Just because they were wrong doesn't mean Rivera has to be. He was the best player ever at his position. Speaking of Hall of Fame, how about former UVM hockey player Martin St. Louis? He has taken a new job. He is going to get back in the NHL and be part of the coaching staff for the Columbus Blue Jackets, and what he's going to be is a special teams consultant, and he is going to be part of the Columbus Blue Jackets, but not a guy you see on the bench every single game. This seems like a pretty well-controlled job. Those are the words that Rich used earlier in the huddle, and that feels right. There's a lot of control with this job. He's going to live in Connecticut. He's going to make some appearances throughout the year in Columbus. It reunites him with John Tortorella, who was his head coach in Tampa Bay, where they made some beautiful music together from 2000 to 2008, including St. Louis being being the MVP of the league and the Lightning being Stanley Cup champions. Makes sense. Also, St. Louis excelled on the power play throughout his career. Really, really was part of some vital offensive statistics for those Lightning teams that played so well, including the Lightning team that won the championship. And Columbus has struggled on special teams. So they come out this year, they're 27th in power play goals. They're 27th in power play average and percentage on the power play. So they need some help. Makes sense. It's a logical connection between Tortorella and St. Louis. Can't imagine it's going to be, I don't want to say not involved, but overly time intensive. I mean, his family is used to him already. You know, he coaches his kids, things like that. He says he's still going to be able to do that stuff. So his family's used to him coaching and being out and traveling and things like that. So him going to Columbus a couple weeks a year, I don't think will be a huge deal. So congratulations to Martin St. Louis for being able to get back in to the NHL. It's been a big year for him. He gets inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That was back in, hard to believe it was back in September. I believe that was right. And how time flies here. And here we are in January, and just now 5 months later, St. Louis is now a coach for his old coach. Look, we got to take a quick break. I went way too long with Kyle Soplicki. Jim Plumer, UVM women's hockey coach, he's going to join us. They've got something special coming up on February 1st that you need to know about. We get right back in here to the Cat's Den on 101.3 The Game.
Get your Catamount questions in now at 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. It's the Cat's Den with Brady Farkas on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com.
Welcome back here in the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. Every Tuesday, 6 till 7, we enter the Cat's Den. All sports, all angles in Catamount country. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and talk with UVM women's hockey coach Jim Plumer, frequent guest on the Cat's Den. Jim, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it. I didn't realize I was frequent, but I'll take it.
Well, you are definitely frequent. Always welcome on the Cat's Den. We appreciate you coming on. Your team right now, 7-14-4 on the year. And look, an outsider looks at your record and says, oh, they're probably not where they want to be at this point of the season. But you guys just a couple weeks ago had a win over nationally ranked Providence. How does that win help you propel yourself towards the end of the season here?
Well, I mean, well, first of all, thanks for diving so deep and realizing how we're doing. And I think you're right in what you say about the outsider. You know, we'll just look at the record and say we're not where we want. As an insider, I would say the record isn't what we would want it to be. The way we're playing, you know, we're getting a lot closer to sort of playing the, being able to put these things together and get the results that we need. But, you know, I think this team has always been a team that's been dangerous against nationally ranked opponents. Last year we beat the eventual national champ in Clarkson and had gone out and upset Minnesota, who had been ranked third or fourth at the time. And actually we had two really competitive games at Providence. We won the first game 5-4 in overtime and then lost the second one 2-1. So, and then had a couple close games, even against BC this weekend, who's ranked 10th. You know, 2-1 games going into the third period, a little bit of a depleted lineup with an injury or two out there. But you know, this is who we are. We're not always you know, a team of all stars per se, but you know, I think we really strive to make the sum better than the parts. And this young team with 15 freshmen and sophomores has really come together. And I'm certainly excited about the fact that we've been able to score some goals, you know, really over the last, you know, 8-10 games. We've sort of consistently been scoring, had a bunch of games where we scored 5 or 4 goals. So we're making progress.
You guys played 6 games over the winter break where students are on break. Is it easier as a coach to have that scenario where there is no school and they can focus on hockey, or is it harder because they're not in a routine, there's more free time for them, the crowds aren't as big because students aren't filling the seats? What's better for a coach?
Well, the crowds aren't a factor, so I'm not going to – maybe that might be a factor for basketball or men's hockey. But, you know, I think theoretically it's better. I mean, you know, we like the fact that we get a little extra time with them for meetings and some team building, and we did some fun things. We had a fierce gingerbread house building competition. So from that perspective, I think it is nice to have a couple of weeks. These kids are serious students. There's a lot of stress at a school like UVM time-wise on their schedule. So that's good. You'd think that they would be relaxed, and you know what ends up happening is they're sitting around watching Netflix all day, and I think they crave the routine. I think they actually do really well when their time is structured. So like that first week back, it's good. I think by the second week, it's actually good that we don't have a longer break than that, and that the kids are back to classes, because I think they end up getting a little bit logy from laying around watching, binge watching too many Netflix series.
UVM women's hockey coach Jim Plumer with us here on the Cats Den, 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. Team's going to take on Northeastern on the road this upcoming weekend, January 25th and 26th. But then February 1st, you have a big matchup with Boston University at home at Gutterson Fieldhouse. It's your Pack the Gut Challenge presented by the Windjammer. You guys have been, this has been an annual event. Tell our fans about the Pack the Gut Challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it started, I guess this is going to be our fifth one now. Started with Danny Rancourt, a girl who graduated in 2014, who originally conceived it as a fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, which has unfortunately since ceased existence. But she wanted to do something that was community service oriented, but also gave us a chance to pack Gutterson in a way that women's hockey doesn't get very often. The excitement, the atmosphere, the energy from the crowd that the men get at most of their games. So, you know, we've been successful that first year. We broke the Hockey East attendance record. And then in one of the subsequent years, we broke it again. So we have the two most well-attended games, including playoff games, in Hockey East history. So certainly hope that this will be a big matchup. We're heading down the home stretch towards the playoffs, and BU, we had a real good series with them in November, and it'll be a good game, and certainly, you know, we could use all the help we can get from fans that come out and support us.
I know that we're 10 to 15 years from seeing an effect at the college level as a result of the U.S. women's team winning the gold medal at the Olympics last year. You know, the young girls who are now playing hockey aren't going to be in college for a long time. I get that. But are you sensing kind of a groundswell movement in the women's game, more interest when you just you talk to recruits who have younger sisters, things like that? Are you getting the sense that that mattered?
Yeah, you know, interestingly, I got an email Saturday night from a guy who had said that he wanted to just take his nephew, no, I'm sorry, he took his 7-year-old son to a women's hockey game because he wanted them to see the quality of women's hockey. He knew that there were some Olympians that had, there were three U.S. Olympians that are on the BC team, and he was extremely impressed. And so I think, you know, if it's reaching guys that want to take their sons to see women's hockey, it's certainly got to be inspiring the young girls. So I'm excited about the growth that's going to happen as a result of the publicity that we're getting from the gold medal team.
We'll get you out of here on this, Jim. And I ask a question like this. It feels like every time I talk to a coach of either basketball or hockey, but I'm going to ask you again. Now that we know that the refurbished Gutterson Fieldhouse is happening and you're just – you know, 2 years away from it, this can impact your recruiting now. How big a piece of your recruiting puzzle is the renovation of Gutterson Fieldhouse now? How much is it helping?
It's helping a lot because we recruit younger players, and it has been for a couple of years. We've been talking about it for a couple of years, knowing that it was, you know, coming close to fruition, and the fact that, you know, we recruit kids in their freshman, sophomore years of high school now. So we've really got to convince them as they look forward that, you know, that this is going to be here. And, you know, we've already got a significant number of commitments into 2020 and beyond. And those kids are going to walk in the door here and be able to play in, you know, what's going to feel like a new facility, but with all of the, you know, the great character that the Gut has. So, you know, it's a big game changer. We certainly believe.
Jim Plumer, UVM women's hockey coach, team looking to get back on the winning trail this weekend against Northeastern, and then Friday, February 1st, 7 p.m. Gutterson Fieldhouse, Boston University comes to town. It is the Pack the Gut Challenge presented by the Windjammer. I'll have some thoughts on that when we're off the air here. Jim, I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again, and good luck.
Great. Thanks, Brady.
I got plenty of time. I got plenty of thoughts, but not enough time to give them. I'll have to address that in a future edition of the Cast Then, because I went way long today. Trivia tonight at the Burger Bar. Rich will see you there, 7:30 to 9:30. Great prizes and great specials on Collective Arts Brewing. Congratulations to Yankee fans out there. Mike Messina, Mariano Rivera into the Hall of Fame. We'll see you tomorrow with the Huddle at 3, everybody. It's the Cast Then here on 101.3 The Game.
Hi, this is Charlie Huddick. Are you tired of all the relentless ads and commercials promising great